All right, guys. Well, welcome to War Man's. It's our very first podcast. My name is Bill, Roast Bill on every War Machine related forum that there is. And my partner here is Brian.
Hey, guys. Brian, also known as Brian B, on the Muse forums, Paint and Vagrant on various other forums, etc. Something Awful, things like that.
We are from the Detroit meta. We play at a store in Clinton Township called Gamer's Gauntlet. We both have been playing through Mark II for sure. We both got started in Mark I, but mostly Mark II. I've played Rhett. Crix actually is probably faster to list what I don't have. I don't have any Circle, and I don't have any significant Kador. I have a lot of experience with everything else. Bri, what do you have?
I'm not quite as multifaceted as yourself. I've got stuff I've played enough to be considered, you know, like an actual player of the faction. I played Rhett for a while, then I played Scorn for quite a while, and then Crix for about a year last year, maybe, I don't know, whatever, 15 months, something like that, and then now I'm doing a little Signar.
Cool. So what we're really trying to do here, guys, we're not sure what the format's going to be week to week or whatever. We're not going to take this super seriously. We think we have enough experience that we can maybe make this useful to newer players especially. But we just want to be entertaining and talk about the game that we love.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think we have a lot to say that applies to similar players to ourselves. And by that, I mean sort of intermediate to, you know, sort of B-plus players. Like, we don't go to cons and win everything, but we're definitely, you know, a threat to win tournaments when we play in them. And I think we're experienced enough players now that we should have something we can bring to the table.
Let's put it this way. We both have beat Chuck and Jake, but we're not 50-50.
No. No, it's definitely not 50-50. We do get to play those guys a lot, though, so we're just going to ride the coattails of their internet fame. And, you know, Jake loves having his name dropped, so I'll make sure to say it a bunch more times in this podcast.
All right, so like we said, we're gonna be kicking around different formats. We're probably going to rotate a third seed in here, not unlike you hear on Muse, where different guys get in there just to break it up so you're not too tired of Brian and I. Maybe even we can get lucky and get the great Jake or Chuck on here once in a while. I think that'll be exciting. We actually, even in our very first episode here, have another guy from our meta that's going to come on and talk about some stuff. He was an inventor of a bit, so we had to involve him in the very first episode of it.
I like the idea of having three or more people on almost all the time, so I'm going to be pushing for that. I think it's as much as we can, although there's going to be some parts where it's just Bill and I bullshitting. A lot of times we have, you know, conversations over Skype about War Machine anyway, so some of that's just going to be us recording kind of our jibber-jabber, and hopefully it's pretty interesting. And then, you know, as far as us sort of making our introductions, I guess we could introduce our meta. I mean, does that seem like a good idea to you, Bill?
I think so. I think it's relevant.
Okay.
Although we already name-dropped the two legends, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, you know, those are people that obviously everyone's heard of. You know, we have to mention Jake a couple more times to make him happy.
Jake.
Yeah, you know, maybe not all at once.
Bill, cut that out.
Yeah, maybe later in this recording we can, like, mention him once or twice. We can leave some Easter egg Jakes as well, just so he'll listen to the very end. But we play in the Metro Detroit meta, which is – I call it Metro Detroit because a lot of people call it the Detroit meta, and nobody actually lives in Detroit really. And, you know, that meta includes obviously well-known players like Jake and Chuck, Hollywood – although Hollywood is apparently moving fairly soon, which is kind of a bummer. I like that guy a lot.
Yeah, I'm going to miss him for sure.
Yeah, he's a super fun dude to have around. And he also fucking lives for violence.
That's true.
And I mean, I think that's a good attitude to have when you're moving elsewhere. You know, you're in a new town, you don't have any friends, but no one's going to fuck with you.
I feel like
you're Hollywood.
He lives by page five in real life.
Yeah, he actually is.
I love Hollywood.
The living personification of page five. Yeah, so anyway, those guys obviously well known. Garen, Docs, those dudes are all pretty well known. But as far as other players in our meta that maybe aren't as well known, and the other stores of the meta. There's Gamers Gauntlet, which is in Clinton Township. That's where we play the majority of the time. We got a lot of bros that play there, and we have some very good players there. RIW is the shop that Jake and Chuck mostly play at. That's out in Livonia. So if anybody's in Michigan in general, in the Detroit area, you know, the Southwest, or excuse me, Southeast Michigan, this is definitely pertinent information for you. And then there's some other shows. There's Flint, which is a smallish meta, but they've got some pretty good players up there, and they're trying to grow it as well. They're kind of in a budding meta sort of period where they're starting to add some players, and they got pretty good turnout for journeyman leagues and things like that.
Yep, that's Gamer's Sanctuary up there.
Give them that's right. Yep, Gamer's Sanctuary. That's a great shop. And then there's a couple stores out in Lansing and Saginaw, places like that. I don't know them super well because I'm unfortunately not able to make it out to their tournaments very often, or ever, I should say. I would like to. I would definitely like to. I just unfortunately am just too fucking busy to.
Well, and that's getting to like the 2-hour drive when we have.
Yeah.
We're pretty blessed in this area sometimes to have as many as two or sometimes even three tournaments in a weekend. Just sticking to those three stores.
Yep. Yeah, and you know, I feel bad because a lot of those guys do come out to our events, so I would like to make it out to theirs, and I'm hoping to do that at some point this summer, but hasn't happened yet. So shout out to you guys. You guys are cool. You know, appreciate you coming out to our events when you can make it. We're going to try to return the favor at some point. I guess probably the majority of our talk will be centered around Gamers Gauntlet. That store's where we play the most. A buddy of Bill's actually owns it, so we sort of we can kind of hang out there, you know, as much as we'd like. And it's a very budding meta as far as it started off with kind of journeyman league-esque players, and now has probably 5 to 10 players who could, you know, win tournaments or at least compete pretty highly in tournaments. And I think that's pretty awesome. Yeah.
It's really great to see these guys grow up from, 20 guys in our first journeyman league about a year and a half ago, into very competent players, so quickly, way faster than I did. That's for sure.
Yeah.
I wish I had a meta like this to grow up in as a War Machine player.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been sort of cultured by the more experienced players. And, you know, a lot of these guys, sometimes it's just the guys who can handle getting kind of beat up for a while, you know.
Well, that learning curve exists in this game, period. For every new player, you're going to get hammered for a while.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like you can only soften it so much before it's pretty much just like, hey, look, you have to accept the fact that you're going to get rocked. A lot. And then if, you know, you can't handle that, if your ego can't handle it, then you're never going to be a good player of a game as deep as War Machine, for sure.
Yeah. No, it's really cool to see the gap shrink so much from guys that used to get stomped constantly or are kicking my ass all the time now. It's great. I'm so happy to see them get to that level so quickly.
Yeah, me too, man. It's really cool. We have a fairly diverse selection of factions at play. You know, we don't have a bunch of guys, you know, it's not like a Krix dominated meta or a Protectorate dominated meta. I think we have a fairly good spread of the factions.
I think pretty much everything's covered.
Yeah. I mean, there's not a ton of Scorn and there's not a ton of Legion at the shop. Although obviously if Jake shows up, that pretty much covers Legion for everybody. You know, outside of that, I think we're pretty good. You know, we have competent Krix and Menoth players, and I'm a Signar player. I won't call myself competent quite yet, but I feel like in general we have what are considered sort of the common, like, top-tier factions, which is a stupid thing in general to say. But the things you see at tournaments a lot, which I think Protectorate is probably highest on the list right now. Would you say that's probably fair?
I think so. I think what you're getting at is you're definitely not getting starred for tournament-worthy lists. Or challenging games at the store. It's not constantly playing against, a shitty pigs list over and over again. You're going to see the real stuff too.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, I think there's top tier lists being played. Like I see Epic Kruger, I see Epic Gatsby, I see Harbinger on tables in our meta a lot. You know, in some cases, obviously if you're a new player, sometimes that's rough to deal with. But again, our new players are sort of experienced now, and hopefully they can sort of take, you know, anybody who comes in who's new and sort of culture them into a better player as well. So,
yeah, I guess what we're trying to say is we love our meta.
And, yeah, it's awesome.
We're really happy that we got the guys we got. And we're going to keep trying to grow it. So I think we're at a point now where we can bring it to our first segment.
Best friends forever!
All right, so when we decided we were going to make this podcast, we were looking for segments or bits that we thought maybe were absent right now from podcasts. We didn't really want to rehash, you know, Muzon Minis every week or Cripple Systems every week. So we wanted to find something that was our own. And as asking around some buddies of mine that listen to all the podcasts that are available for what they would like to see. And my one buddy, Jay, came up with what I think is a pretty good idea.
So Jay mentioned a build that, you know, he wanted to talk about, you know, sort of the idea of like War Machine BFFs and kind of to expound on that idea, talking about models that are kind of create modules where on the tabletop they have a synergy with each other. And create long-lasting friendships. And, you know, quick examples of that are stuff like, you know, like obvious ones are, you know, Bane Thralls and Tartarus and things like that where there's a super obvious synergy. But then there's more subtle ones. And since Jay and I are both Signar players, we figured we'd kind of keep it with like a little bit of a Signar theme today.
All right. So our very first incarnation of this segment, we wanted to bring in the guy that suggested it. So we have Jay on the line.
Hey, thanks, guys. Yep, I'll go ahead and kick it off. Some of the ideas that I was thinking of while we were coming up with this segment was not to state, like Brian said, the most obvious ones. Everybody knows the more popular ones are the more powerful ones. So I was going to start this off with a not-so-well-used caster and a decent jack. I wanted to start this off with Jeremiah Cray. In the Centurion, everybody knows the one knock on the Centurion is the speed 4. Everybody loves the armor 21, but hates the speed 4. Well, Cray fixes that with full tilt, taking him up to speed 8. Feet turn, it's just a match made in heaven. He can, he's got a threat range. Feet turn 13 inches, with reach included, POW 18, critical sustained attack, boosted the attack rolls, and if he doesn't kill you, then you have an arm 21 jack staring you in the face. So if I use Cray, I always have a Centurion. I use him as a fullback getting up the field, and then when it's go time, on the feet turn, he's just one of my favorite jacks.
Yeah, that's definitely a bromance right there. I think on the feet, if I'm doing the math right, I think the feet turn with a plus 2 inches of charge, I think gets it to 15.
Right. 13 pure. Yep, I said that wrong. Yep, 13 pure range plus reach to get to 15.
Yeah, right. And then, like you said, I think, in my opinion, probably the two best uses of that that particular combo are the turns that you just want to walk it. You get to walk 8 inches and still polarity shield, which is amazing. Because that's 4 inch in polarity shield sometimes doesn't get you into the scenario zone you want to be into or, you know, wherever.
Yep, that's usually how I like, Cray is in speed 8. So they just kind of go in tandem up the field. He can use his polarity shield, reach, out to the sides. It's difficult to get a good head-on angle to Cray with, a large base and everything. They get around a Centurion's, melee reach range. I just really use him as a fullback until it's time to get offensive.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I'm a really big fan of boosted attack rolls on the Centurion, just increasing that crit chance for sustained. I know there's a dude, I can't remember the guy's name, but he had a big thread on like the Privateer forums about, I think it was one of the early Mark II Gen Cons, like I think it was maybe like 2010 or something like that. I think it was 2010. And
that would be the first one available, I think, for Mark II.
Yeah, and the dude played in a hardcore, and he beat a bunch of really good players with Cray. He ended up actually like in the final assassinating Chuck on like the top of 2 with a Centurion charge, where he basically critted on the first spear attack over a wall. I think it was Peace Scar. We'd have to ask Chuck for sure if he'll talk to us about it. He might he might just freak out if we ask him, like Chuck tends to do when you ask
this
him about
this. This interview is over.
Yeah, well, you know, Chuck's one of those guys, like if you roll, you know, 0.5 above average for three rolls in a row, he'll remember it till the day he dies.
Hey.
So, but anyway, I mean, that's
Brian talking.
Yeah.
Brian.
Just to be clear. Yeah.
I love Chuck. He's actually, I think he might be my favorite person on the whole planet to play War Machine against. But yeah, so that three dice attack, proccing the crit even if it's the second attack sometimes, you know, that'll guarantee the kill on a lot of casters, and it really helps the math on killing, you know, stuff like, you know, inviolable resolved Getrix, or, you know, I'm trying to think of another example, like an angel with forced evolution.
Yeah, those any of that high defense stuff that you're boosting your attacks to guarantee hits with.
Yeah,
that's some of you know, the things I love about Kray is it's not Mat 6. You know, he's a heavy cav. That charge attack is Mat 8. You know, it's just that plus it's boosted.
Yep.
You know, it says, you know, the average you should be doing about defense 18.
Yep. So you can almost guarantee you're going to hit any heavy, even those def 16 angels, you know, behind a wall. You're probably, I mean, you're looking at better than a coin flip chance of hitting a forced Evo angel behind a wall, which I think is the pretty much the highest a war beast can get as far as defense. I think that's 18.
Yeah,
so
I hope that's the highest it can get to.
Yeah, maybe I'm forgetting something, but I mean, that's got to be close to the highest they can get at least. So, but yeah, super good. And because it's a jack that you don't see in a ton of lists, or maybe it's a jack that you see in a more defensive role, you really can catch people with their pants down with that, especially if they're not super familiar with Kray.
It's hard for people to wrap their head around. They see the jack, they see him bulky, they see his shield, they know he's speed 4. Even when you tell them full tilts on, and you tell them what the feat does, it can take a minute to do all the math in your head, and they don't expect it to come from as far away as it actually does.
Now, a negative to that is that it's totally linear, but I suppose Signar has the tools to remove some speed bumps that could be in the way, you know, little warriors that are in the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Or even big stuff, maybe thunderbolts and stuff could move some roadblocks to open up the freeway for him to come through.
Yeah, absolutely. And because of the cav rules, and you have
you got impact attacks too. I didn't even think of that.
Yeah, I mean, let me look at the feat because I can't remember. I don't believe it boosts impact attacks. I could be wrong about that.
No, it does.
Okay. Well, then that pretty much settles it. If there's warrior models in the way that aren't tough and they're not crazy high defense, you can pretty reliably like run over three dudes on the way to kill something. You know, to go kill, you know, if there's like three blood trackers blocking your charge lane to Getrix, then that's not a problem, more than likely. You're just going to run them over. You know, again, every time you try an impact attack, even with boosted attack rolls, on your way to something you're trying to kill, you should be kind of internally like wincing because you're putting pretty much your whole turn and possibly your game on an impact attack roll, because if it doesn't work, you just stop. That being said, at least with Kray, with the fully boosted impact attack rolls, it's a play you can make and feel a little bit more comfortable doing it.
Is Kray giving them a free charge with this too?
Yep.
What about Trample? Is Trample involved in this in any way?
Here, I brought it up. That's something I typically don't do tons. Let's see. Yeah.
You can charge without spending focus.
You could trample and still have all the benefits of the speed and everything, but it's obviously not as good.
You're giving up your
initials. You don't want to do that.
Yeah. Well, you give up your initials and you're giving up what would have been a bought attack as well, because you have to spend focus for it.
So you're giving up three attacks to do that. And one of them's boosted. And you're also giving up the cav charge to help you connect on that first one.
Right.
All right, so Trample's terrible, my mistake. That's why you guys play Signar.
It's not necessary. I wouldn't call it terrible because
if it's your only option, it's your only option.
If it wins you a game, it wins you a game. But it's definitely suboptimal in most cases.
I would definitely be trying to make the impact attacks land instead of trampling over stuff.
So, yeah, no, I would just conclude that, yeah, I think Signar, as far as making that, you know, making this match made in heaven happen, is real good at clearing out infantry, you know, between, if you want to take Kray's tier list, between the Rangers marking for the B-13, dropping some Mage Storms, just anything. I think, you know, guided fire leading up to the time you want your heavies to charge, things like that. I think any roadblocks that you might have in the way, Signar is pretty good at taking care of. And this just happens to be a particular combination I think can remove the heavies, which can be hard sometimes for Signar to do. This just happens to be a solution to that.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it turns the math on killing, you know, a Centurion struggles to kill something like a Carnivian, you know, which is right. an 18 heavy with 30 boxes. A Centurion can't one round that under normal circumstances. You know, it's doing a 10 damage charge and then two bot attacks, so that's another 14. So it's doing 24, assuming every attack hits. Which is an assumption you can't make when you're rolling fives. Like you're going to miss a five sometimes. If when you're talking about under the feet, free charge is effectively an additional attack, pretty much auto hitting at that point against Death 11, and all at straight dice. So now you're talking about a 10, and then three sevens afterwards, or you know a 10.5 and three sevens afterwards, which is enough to kill. You know, now you can one round heavies with your heavies, and Signar doesn't generally do that very well. And it's really sweet that with Kray, Kray's feet, you can do that.
And you can probably expect to do that with even two heavies on that turn, yeah?
Yeah, you'll have, you can have, be it maybe a Stormwall, POW 20. I prefer to have multiple Stormclads at POW 19 just for I just like the versatility of having more models than Stormwall. As going against the norm as that might be, but with Kray in any way, I do like having the more heavies, the better. I typically will run three with the Centurion being my favorite.
Yeah, you're just breaking up your force.
Yeah, you know, I'm super torn about Stormwall with Kray because if you're sort of building to just, you know, sort of around a guided fire build, Stormwall's guns can really do a lot of work. But sure. at some point, you generally are like, hey, I want a feat, and I want to send my stuff into melee. And that's when, like, Kray hiding behind Stormwall doesn't work anymore. And so I'm sort of starting to lean more towards your idea of Kray's heavies being just melee threats primarily, and then using the rest of the list to clear, you know, just the dudes in the way, pretty much. I think I like that style of play better with Kray.
That's typically, I mean, almost all jam lists are a pain. You know, I can't deal with them with Kray. But if I'm not going to get jammed by either statistics or, you know, just anything, trolls are, you know, obviously notorious at that. You know, you use the Rangers and the Hunters and some of the other stuff to set up that feat turn where the three heavies hit. And
yeah.
if you can tee it up with the rest of the army rounds one and two to where, yeah, when you decide to feat, if the game's not over, it's so skewed in your favor at that point.
Yeah, I mean, I think just kind of talking general matchups for Kray in that style of list, I'd say just in general with Kray, I think the matchups you're looking for are probably more you're probably looking for either sort of like balanced lists that aren't super infantry heavy, don't have a ton of tough models, or you're looking for like beast heavy in general. I think then you get to play a threat range game when there's not a ton of stuff in the way that can slow you down, and Kray generally wins that. And you know, whether it's through guns or whether it's through, you know, super long threat ranges with full tilt and all the other tricks. So I think that's what he wants to play against. And that's sort of like when I think about him as like maybe in a three list format, you can look for that matchup and drop him and really surprise somebody who's not super familiar with him.
Sure.
you know, in a two list, it can be a little tougher trying to find that ideal list to drop him against. You may have to play against some matchups that aren't necessarily ideal.
Lord, I know.
Well, is Cray super character dependent? Maybe that makes him a three list MVP if you know you're leaning into, you know, your marquee Jack and Cray, and there's no characters involved in this little combo. Maybe that's a blessing for him, because I feel like Signar is pretty character dependent.
Yeah, that's a super good point. I mean, his tier. I guess I should state that. Yeah, I prefer to run him in tier. The AD heavies is amazing. I just like the tier so much. And if you don't want to use the Black 13th, you can either have mechanics in there or some gun mage adepts to round out those points. But you could, you know, other than the Black 13th, you could easily have zero characters whatsoever. He doesn't have a character jack that, you know, for him. And I mean, so yeah, no, he doesn't need any characters whatsoever. So that's a good point.
In my the list I've been sort of tooling up for him, the only character that I potentially might have in there is Arlen. And, you know, the list I've been running, or not running, I should say, the list I've been sort of dojoing recently have had the reason they're not in tier is because of Squire. I just like having the additional focus. I know that the AD is really awesome on the heavies, and I like having the multiple ranger units too. But I wanted to try them out of tier and just kind of force more warjacks in there, and then maybe like a unit, whether it's gun mages or something like boomhowers. Although now when you're talking about character restrictions, boomhowers are probably – you can make the argument that boomhowers are the number one character restriction on Signar in a lot of competitive lists.
Sure, they're going to be elsewhere for sure. I mean, they're going to be somewhere. You know, if you're going to a tournament, two or three list, if they're they'll be in somebody's.
Well, yeah, they're going to be there.
And the one of the bros that we're featuring here, the Centurion, kind of fills the same role as them, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah,
sure. Just like a little mini roadblock. I mean, he's maybe a min, you know, the equivalent of a min unit of boomhowlers, you know, kind of base to base or something. He just, yeah. Let's see, what would it be, 6 inches wide, you know, reach, base, then reach.
Yeah, well, and they're still, they're both meant to jam up a zone. Although you're probably getting more work out of the Centurion, you know, in the combo that we're talking about than you do with boomhowlers.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, in general, you're, the lists that aren't building around like a, outside of Cray, the Centurion operates almost purely as a scenario piece, sticks his toe in the zone, and says you can't charge me, and then infantry, you know, hopefully you have him kind of faced off against, you know, melee infantry that can't damage him, or guns that can't really damage him either, and then you're pretty much, you've got that zone under control for most of the game, and then you don't need to allocate him focus to do the polarity shield, you know, so that's generally his role. And sometimes you see him with boomhowers, like, those are your two scenario pieces, and then the rest of the list is just a ton of guns. Right. But yeah.
Yep, that's a good one. So I think in our debut, we've officially set the record for the most talking about Jeremiah Cray on any podcast.
Yeah, it's got to be close. I'm sure somebody somewhere did it once, but
once, but yeah. Maybe. So Brian, you had a couple of thoughts, right? And
yeah, I did. It's actually sort of it kind of rolls into Cray as well, because it's not a bad module to put in a Cray list. But this module is actually what I like about it, and why these guys are BFFs, is that they are caster independent, and it's another Signar combo, and it's based on another heavy warjack that people had mixed feelings about, and it's the Stormclad, and it's with and it's marshaled to, you know, the sword knights and the officer, and then the other two components of this combo are Arlen and then the Storm Blades. And this combo, I'm not pretending I made this up or anything. This has existed for a long time, but it has kind of become in vogue in a lot of my lists, because I like heavies. Like I play War Machine because I want like big stompy robots. So if I can put a heavy in a list like Epic Kane, that literally costs him no focus, that's pretty sweet because Epicane doesn't want to spend his focus. And even though I love Warjax, I can't put a Stormclad in his battle group. Like, I can't do that to myself. I want to take like a million shots every turn. So you put this module into a list, and, you know, arguably the weak point is maybe the Storm Blades. Some people will flesh that unit out to full. Other people will just run it as the minimum, as just a little counterpunch unit of six guys you can hit pretty hard. But you've got effectively a three focus Warjack that maybe isn't going to necessarily one round of heavy, but it has a 15-inch threat range. That 15-inch threat range is predicated on charging. It's prontoing then charging. So, you know, you pronto 5 and then you charge and your threat range is 10 there. And that's all that's really predicated on is that you got to make two command check, or you got to make a command check with a reroll.
So you can't fail your command check four times in a row is what you're saying?
Yeah. Most players that aren't me could probably get this combo to work pretty well. I have brutally failed. Like, I think I went against Bill recently. I went two turns in a row where I double failed the command check. Failed the command check, failed the reroll from the banner, and the next turn did it again.
Yep.
So I guess
10-11.
Yeah, I guess that's a weakness. But that being said, I really like that module in with a lot of casters because you get a pretty decent little tar pit unit that's resilient to a lot of shooting. You know, people will kind of scoff at Sword Knights because they're base 13, 14. Defensive line puts them up to 16 armor, which on paper people go, well, their armor 16, so they just die left and right to Pal 10 shooting. Not really. I mean, it means you have a coin flip after you hit them. So if your guns are you know, if you're fairly accurate, if you're like a rat 7 unit or rat 6 unit, that's two coin flips in a row to damage one of these Sword Knights. So if you take 10 shots, maybe you killed two. And that's assuming that maybe like Rupert didn't throw tough on them, which is like a combo I sometimes will run as well. So yes, you're gonna remove some, and yes, they can die to other things, but just your sort of typical, like, you know, if there's errants across the table, they don't just insta die to that, like Storm Blades tend to, or you know, some of the other Signar melee infantry that's, you know, kind of generally considered pretty terrible.
Right.
Don't they also bring flank in to consideration here? Is that them?
Yeah, they do.
Yep, with Reach Jacks and stuff. Yeah.
You can get some extra mileage out of them with that.
Yeah. One, you know, there's a lot of nuance to it, and I'm not going to profess that I'm good enough with it yet to say I'm the expert on this particular combo. But you know, I've seen things happen in my games where I will, instead of using Pronto to extend the threat range, because let's face it, you know, 15-inch threat range is not usually necessary in most games. I mean, sometimes it'll happen and you get to alpha, but sometimes you don't. But what you can end up doing is prontoing the Jack into a sweet spot where he's engaging a bunch of stuff. Then using that, you know, so that procs flank for your Sword Knights. So your Sword Knights hit like, you know, they go from like, you know, wiffle bats to fucking battle axes basically. And then they, you know, they go kill a heavy, or they, you know, kill some infantry at Mat 8 or whatever. And then later you get to activate your Stormclad and get to do all its shit, you know. And that's pretty solid. You know, and again, I can't stress it enough, but at no focus cost to your caster. Because, like, Signar casters, a lot of them are just like Crix casters. They don't want to be handing focus out to Jax. It's just not efficient. You know, Kane wants to take Rat 9, Pal 12s at everything, you know, or whatever. Haley wants to cast more TKs or time bombs or et cetera. So, so that's why I like that particular module. And again, I'm certainly not pretending I invented it, but I really like it.
No, it's good. I mean, yeah, that's a good point. I don't know if there's any caster really with Signar that, you know, just won't hemorrhage focus. I mean, yeah. They almost all want to. You know, they want to keep it for themselves, you know, for either attacks or spells or upkeeps or whatever. I mean, they're always, I'm trying to think, I don't think there's too many that aren't, you know, just focus starved almost all the time. So, I mean, yeah, anything that you can do like that is huge. And that kind of goes back to a little bit of a theory, or this is a good example of a theory that I had You know, not to get into the is Focus better than Fury or anything like that, but you know, with Horde's ability to wipe Fury the way that they do, you know, the inverse of that, which is basically what the two games are, just inverses of each other. To be able to add focus, free focus somehow, to be able to boost something somehow, is huge. You know, that's it's just the equivalent of a Shepard taking four off a Ravagor or something.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you could see that even like if you look at not to tangent too wildly, but like if you look at you know, Convergence, they sort of fixed quote unquote the focus mechanic by creating an additional couple layers of various types of focus efficiency, whether it's, you know, the sort of the induction drive, you know, sliding the focus over, or the I can't remember the is it the corollary, the thing that lets you like kind of cycle focus and sort of their squire.
I think that's the one.
Yeah.
It's some technical sounding word.
Yeah.
Right.
I know. But yeah, I totally agree. And so, you know, what that lets me do in my list is I can be like, I can put a heavy warjack that hits at POW 19 with Electro Leap and Mat 7 and Reach into, you know, an Epic Kane list, because I don't really love Infantry Machine, and I didn't buy into Signar to play Infantry Machine with a ton of Merc Infantry, especially. Like, I don't really want to play – like, I'll play Boomhauers, and I'll occasionally play, like, Nis Hunters, and I'll play Ion and Holt and all the other solos and shit like that. But I don't want to play a list where I've got three, like, full-size Merc units out there, or, like, you know, I don't want to play, like, Nis, Boomhauers, Forge Guard in a list.
Right. Yeah, I agree with you, Brian. Yeah, I'm in the same boat. Definitely. The reason why I picked Signar was it's all about the casters and jacks.
Yeah. Those are the two things that attracted me to the faction. I mean, some of the infantry I do really enjoy. Mm-hmm. You know, I love like Storm Knights. I wish they were better for the most part, although I still play them sometimes. But definitely for the casters. Definitely for the warjacks. So you know. And you got to make concessions. If you want to play competitively, you don't put, you know, two heavies on a caster who wants to spend all his focus killing dudes. You know, you don't put a bunch of melee heavies on Kara Sloan because she wants to shoot her gun a bunch and cat, you know, and upkeep refuge or whatever.
Right.
So, you know, I just the module slots into various lists. I mean, I've run it with Epic Striker, who I'm still not sure if I actually like Epic Striker. He's fun to play. So I guess I like him for that reason. I haven't run it with Kray, but I actually think it's super good with Kray. The reason for that is Kray has no focus. I mean, he's doing it every turn. He's doing a ton of stuff.
Right.
With his focus. He's handing it out. He's upkeeping full tilt or casting full tilt on something else. Sometimes he's casting,
guided fire is three, boost three damages. Yeah. You're out.
Easy Riders 3.
Yeah.
Got it.
Well, is his stuff battle group dependent?
Yeah, well, almost all of it is.
Oh, well, that kind of takes away from that little module then.
Well, the module, you don't need full tilt on the module because the module, the Stormclad on the module goes 15 inches by himself. And then as far as I can remember, and I'm going to look like a dummy if I'm wrong here, I'm pulling up my worm as we speak, Kray's feet is not battle group, it's just warjacks. So marshaled warjacks can gain all the bonuses and you know, aren't affecting his stack, which is generally pretty strained.
Yeah, it's just friendly faction, so you're good.
Yep. So you got a 17-inch threat range Stormclad. Now I will say it's not gonna have the cav rules, because it's not in his battle group, so that's sort of a bummer. But it's still, you know, it's still a Stormclad that he's running for free. So functionally now, if he's got two heavies in his battle group, he could fully load two heavies feet and have three fully loaded heavies screaming at you, all with boosted attack rolls, kind of exploding the universe. So again, haven't run it. Don't know if it's good.
It's,
in my head, yeah, it sounds awesome.
it sounds really good, and it sounds, you know, module. That's probably the best way to describe that. Yeah, I mean, that's just kind of like a little cluster that I think you can, you know, cut and paste into almost any caster you want. I mean, just kind of sitting here, like you said, Epic Kane is perfect. The Haleys that want to throw away all their focus on stuff, or, you know, it's perfect for them. I think it's really good with even P-Striker. Yep. I mean, I don't know. It's just got a lot going on.
Yeah, Sword Knights in particular I like with Striker 1. You know, they get up to armor 21 on the fee turn, and then, you know, they're just a fairly they're cheap. You know, they're like a cheap – they're not – I mean, they're not blowing up the world with melee attacks. But, you know, when you got a caster who's – a lot of Sigmar casters can enable them to do work, you know.
Yeah.
Striker can, you know, spend his focus because he's not feeling that Stormclad now. He can spend it, you know, Earthquake down a unit.
Sure.
And then now they can hit whatever. You know, and then of course just being able to proc flank with pronto moves and stuff, I think is, you know, always pretty solid. So I dig it. It's making its way into more of my lists now that I actually own Sword Knights in the UA. I'm a huge fan of like 6-point units in general. I think almost all of them are pretty solid, other than, I don't know, like what's the goofy Legion guys with the wings that nobody plays ever?
Grotesques?
Yeah.
the dusty guys on every FLT shelf everywhere.
Yeah. Holy shit.
They're just a little caking of dust on them on
just the Thor shelf. It's been up there forever since they were received by UPS.
Yeah, I'm sure our local store has like 4 boxes of them because that's what they do. They're like, hey, let's order this thing 4 times that nobody wants.
They're brand new. Oh, wait.
Yeah.
They'll never see the light of day. Sorry.
Yeah. You know, the worst thing about that unit, and I've watched Jake do it a bunch of times, is you play the Grotesques and you're like, they've got, I think they are control range or command range is 6 or 7. Mm-hmm. I think it might actually be 6, but it's one of those two numbers that you never see on a unit, right?
Right.
You know, and they have these massive – they're not massive, but I mean for a small base model, their arms and their wings stick out really far. So like you've got all the models clumped into basically like an area that's not bigger than – you know, it's not much bigger than like – I don't know, whatever. I mean it's
– it's just a logistical nightmare.
It's bad.
It's like that old game Barrel Full of Monkeys. Yeah. Where like you pick up one and you get a whole chain of them.
Yep. The difference is all the monkeys are falling apart and you're swearing because you spent an hour painting them last night or whatever.
Yep. 10 small base models with wings overhanging trying to fit into command area 6.
Yeah. Jeez. Yeah, it's bad news. I mean, I remember when I played Scorn, like the Annihilators being command 7, I used to find that kind of irritating. But yeah, that command 6 is balls. So, but yeah, I mean, I think, I don't know, I think we could probably talk for hours about, you know, what Sigmar casters maybe work with that particular bundle, but you know, I'll probably save some of that for, well, I guarantee on this podcast I'm going to talk way too much about Sigmar anyway, and people are going to be sick about it.
I'm going to have to curtail you, man.
Yeah, no, that's perfectly fine.
I think we're definitely at a good jumping off point or a good break point for we got two good bromances covered there, and one of them like a large circle of friends even.
Yeah, I mean it's a group romance. It's like the show Friends or the British version of Coupling.
I was gonna say that, and I was like, everybody will make fun of me on the podcast if I say that.
What if you say the
if I said show friends. But yeah, you did it. Thank you.
This is only getting shot out to like 1,500 people on the Muse Network whose iPods they're gonna see this and they're gonna be like, what the fuck podcast is this? So they may not listen to it, but it'll be on their iPods for
until they
for that brief moment. Yeah, until they delete it.
When they hear the end of the Muse guitar and then this starts and they're like, what the fuck?
What the hell is this? Yeah.
Exactly.
Maybe if we tag it, best friends.
Yeah. No, man, it's I'm a big fan of BFFs. I like this idea as a segment too, because I think this is something that maybe intermediate, like new to intermediate players are gonna I don't want to say they miss this kind of stuff, but they're just not necessarily gonna make these connections right away. So I think this is pretty informative. I think you know, advanced players get this stuff, but I think I don't know if anyone's explained it as in as much of a modular way as we're trying to do now. So I think that's cool. I think it, you sure. know,
well, even if they already knew about it, maybe this is a
maybe covering it in a different way a little bit.
Right. Well, or maybe this is at least something that will inspire people to play it or try it out for themselves. Instead of, you know, going with maybe general opinion that they know Centurion sucks or Centurion's got these problems, so why would I play it? Well, then to put an official cherry on this, thank you for the idea, Jay. It's fucking really cool. And as long as, you know, who knows what the future of this is, and if it keeps going well and everything, that'll be great. And I imagine this will be a staple. And thank you for it, because it's really cool.
Thanks. Yeah, no, later on, like, you know, Brian, your section, you know, you can save newer players or players just switching factions, you know, a ton of time, a ton of trial and error. If you don't get to play so much, you know, if you're lucky enough to play, you know, a bunch of games every week and you can trial and error all day long, you know, wonderful for you. But some of us aren't able to play that much. So, you know, if you toss out your little module to, you know, insert caster here, whoever you like best, because this, you know, works great with them, it's huge.
Yeah, I agree. I think newish players tend to have trouble making lists that are cohesive. And I think if you kind of think of your model collection as having little modules in it, and you don't have to be rigid about it. I mean, you can break them up if you want to, but if you think of it that way, instead of it being, oh my God, 50 points, what do I spend all this on? Let me just throw rando things I like in there. You can be like, well, I'm going to build this list around this module or this chunk that I know works pretty well together.
Yep.
And then kind of go from there. And I think that's a list building trick that players seem to, at least to start your lists with, you know.
I totally agree. I'll never forget like the first couple of tournaments that I went to, and it was just an amazement. You know, guy would just drop down 35, 50 points of you know, either Crix. I remember Crix in particular, but a P Scar list in particular. But it was just like, I don't know, just a machine. It was just this move, this did this, this did that.
Yeah.
Go, your turn. You know, it just was so beautifully put together that, yeah, that's the first time I realized that, holy smokes, it's far greater than, you know, this unit looks sweet, let's run it.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, you're coming from tray pushing days, Jay.
You know, I grew up, there's nothing I can do about it. I grew up with big rectangles, just throwing them around, trying to fight my brother-in-law with this, you know, half moon of squares. Just sitting in the corner waiting for me to come across.
Jay, at least you didn't have to have all the guys mounted on individual bases. You could use those, like, those five wide trays to mount your Skaven on or whatever the fuck, High Elf Spearman. And no shame, because I totally grew up on GW games, and, like, the first thing I ever bought was, first wargaming thing I ever bought. I think I was 12, and I bought the, like, I want to say 4th or 5th edition Warhammer Fantasy box, the one that had like the High Elf Spearmen and Archers and the Goblin Spearmen and Archers, just a shitload of both of those.
Yep.
And then just push them around on little cardboard trays around on my floor playing Warhammer by myself. Until I roped some bros in.
That's so fucking sad.
It wasn't sad. It was awesome. Dude, when you're 12, your best friend is yourself. Like, you're just straight up just be like, I can sit here and just play with stupid toys and be like, pew, 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 for hours. Like, I was perfectly content. Then I did find bros to play with, and then it actually became a game that we played incredibly badly and ignored, like, half the rules in the book for a couple years. But
yeah, don't sweat it, dude. You were 12. You couldn't drive. I was 21, High Elves versus Vampire Counts by myself on the dining room table.
That is a different level of sad.
Sure, don't sweat it.
Hey, Bill. You didn't realize that all your friends were this fucking pathetic, did you?
No.
Right.
No, Bill doesn't sit there and play Magic against himself all day long, every day.
That's not a thing, right?
Yes, you do.
It's called fish bowling.
Yeah. Yeah. There's so many sad Magic players out there doing this that they have like a terminology for it.
Sure.
Oh, man. man, just expose me on the very first fucking podcast. Fuck.
Yeah, I'm doing it. I'm doing it. Fuck it. You're gonna just gonna edit it out anyway.
Yeah. Douche. Cut this out, Bill.
Yeah. Bill, cut this out. Oh, wait.
But,
hey, man, well, if you don't, you got to talk because I'll just keep talking and it'll be
it's
so
not
bad.
Bad. It's not, that's not a bad,
it's bad. Nobody wants to listen to one dude talk for like 2 hours, and that's what it'll be if you don't stop me.
I do if it's Penn Jillette.
Oh, all right. Fair enough. You and your
but it's not
Jillette
a bad,
dude, we're BFFs for BFFs.
Yeah,
me and Penn Jillette have a bromance.
Is that did you mail him your toe clippings or something? Are you guys best friends?
Do you think he'd like that?
Yeah, and in like a single white female kind of way.
Oh, that would be nice. Awesome.
Yeah. All right, man.
All right, Jay.
I won't hold you up anymore.
It's not a bad formula though. I thought it was, you know, for a test run. It's, you know, Bavona, you being kind of like the main guy is, you know, good. Bill being the moderator is good because, you know, he knows, you know, more than me, and just the average everyday war gamer. You know, I'm not anybody special, and you guys, you know, bounce off of that or whatever. Is it's a pretty, I think that's probably a pretty good format to, you know, sort of stick to. Yeah, you talk more than both of us, Bavona.
Well, I mean, just whoever's got something to say, they can just go, you know, and then like everybody else kind of chime in and be like, oh, that's a good point, you know. As long as it stays sort of organic and it's not one dude just talking for like 5 minutes
sure.
at a time.
Right. Yeah. No, if we ever ended up on like, say, Ron, you know, I'm not going to sit there and act like.
Yeah.
I'm gonna be talking from the point of view of Bill kicking my ass with Ron 100 times. So might as well let Bill talk now.
Generally, if there's ret chat, I will let Bill go. I mean, I'll ask him like, why do you do this instead of this? You know, why do you run Virus 2 in the tier instead of like the Virus 2 that, you know, Will Pagani runs, stuff like that.
Right.
God, I love that guy so much. Every time I've only been to a couple cons, you know, in the past year, which is unfortunate. But every time I see that dude, I'm just like, man, I love Will Pagani so much. I love him. I don't know why. I just love his style, man.
Did you send him your toenail clippings?
I may have.
A single white female style?
What I did was I plucked one of his precious hairs as he walked by, and he didn't notice. I still got it.
And on that note, I think we can put a cap on.
Best friends for.
All right, I think that's a wrap for us. Thanks for listening to the beta of Warmans. We had a lot of fun making it, and we're hoping for a weekly episode style of format. And I'm sure things will change from this beta to the regular format that we kind of adopt. Feel free to give us any, you know, constructive criticism. We'll have a Facebook group soon, and we'll also have threads on the Muse forums. So thanks so much for listening. Appreciate it. Bye.
Thanks, guys.